T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
The Bears' offense has not been good, and it hasn't just been. We're not just talking about Green Bay, and I know that folks are think that the conversation about Mitchell Trubisky is about what happened last week. It's not. The conversation about Matt Nagy is not just about what happened last week. It's about what's happened since week 11. Since week 11, the Bears have averaged under 19 points a game. Before that, they were averaging 30 points a game under Nagy. There's a difference in the way that they are being defended and the way that they are reacting to it. So if they can't get some of that stuff figured out, bum teams like Denver are going to end up being in games with them that they shouldn't.
Ask any racer, any real racer.
It don't matter if you win by an inch or a mile. Winning's winning.
Make me a bicycle, clown!
Tony, you hit me with the Vin Diesel? Little Fast and Furious action? I almost had you, bro. You never had me. You never had your car. Glad that you were hanging out here with us. Matt Nagy is going to speak at Hallis Hall. When he does, we are going to go to it live. The crew, Rick Camp, executive producer Tony Gill, a.k.a. Tony Two Bags, a.k.a. Tone, a.k.a. Tony has done it again. All of those things. We are here to talk about the Bears and their win yesterday in Denver. There is so much that I have on my notepad that I want to get to in today's show. And I would like to give Matt Nagy some credit. Also, I'll go Barry Horowitz. I mean, what you played there in the open, Tony, was pretty much spot on. It was spot on, my analysis of this game. So I'll go Barry Horowitz and pat myself on the back for that. But I want to give Matt Nagy some credit. I want to give him some credit. Before, Tony, let's try and do this before he gets to the podium, because sometimes he's a little late. Just give me the thumbs up when he's there. But I want to go through what he did to get the Bears ready for the Eddie Pinheiro kick. If you didn't stick around to listen to the post game on The Score or the football after show after we got on after a delay, you may have missed this, okay? But let's go back to last Monday night, all right? Last Monday night, the Texans are playing the Saints. And Deshaun Watson makes an incredible throw that gives the Texans the lead. So the Saints have to then go down and make some plays so that they can win the game. They make two big plays. They first put themselves in position with Drew Brees commanding the offense.
6 seconds, one timeout.
The Texans are playing loose coverage. I don't agree with this. This is too easy to get a quick completion. He's checking it. Brees sees it.
Here we go. Clock counting down. Drives it over the middle. They do have the timeout, and he gets it to the 40-10 again. Surgical by Brees. Absolutely surgical.
It was just too easy. The Houston Texans were almost in a prevent defense. Look how far the safeties are back. They're 25 yards back. They only need 7 yards. Fall down, call the timeout.
Booger McFarland is exactly right in his analysis on that play. So it leaves the Saints with an opportunity for a 57-yard field goal that Will Lutz nails.
58-yard attempt for the win!
So you're saying, Lawrence, what does this have to do with the Bears? Here's what it has to do with the Bears. On Saturday, Matt Nagy showed this sequence of events to the Bears in preparation for their game in Denver. Now, I don't know if the guy's psychic. I don't know if he's Steve Stone and he happens to be psychic. The overarching point was, if you have time left on the clock in a close game, you can still win it. And what we saw was the Bears in those 37 seconds be able to put themselves in a position. Now, Nagy could have also shown them their own game film from the game against Philadelphia, where they did the exact same thing, where they went down. The only thing was that they didn't make the kick. Pinheiro made the kick on Sunday afternoon.
Scales down the ball. O'Donnell the hole from the right hash. Angle to the left. Good placement. Boot by Eddie Pinheiro. Kick to the uprights. And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with a narrow kick to send Denver down as time expires. Bears 16, Denver 14. They escape with a victory on the road.
Highlight courtesy of our sister station, WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. RIP to Eddie Money, right? Didn't Eddie Money die last week? So now Eddie Pinheiro is now Eddie De Niro, or a.k.a. Eddie Money. He was money on that kick. He was good yesterday, 40, 52, and 53 in a game winner. It's definitely easier to kick from distance in Denver, but who cares? The moment wasn't too big for him. He went out there and he did the damn thing, and the Bears won the game. A game that I think was pivotal for their season. It buys them time because they won. By the way, this is a Built for Tough Bears Monday, brought to you by your local Ford dealers and the Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of your Chicago Bears. I'm Lawrence Holmes, and we're talking about the Bears, and we'll hear from the head coach coming up in a little bit. The offense is still broken, and that's a problem for the Bears and America. But I want to give Matt Nagy some credit for his Monday through Saturday coaching and his in-game coaching yesterday. I don't mean the whole thing, because I still have some issues with game planning and where they think their quarterback is in some of the positions that he's put in. But the fact that you had a coach being taking something that was happening, that happened in the NFL that week, and then presented to his players saying, look, guys, we might end up in a situation like this. And you need to already be thinking positively about how this can be the outcome for us, like it was the outcome for the Saints. That's good coaching. That's preparing a team Monday through Saturday. Now, the game day stuff, there are a couple things that I really liked about what he did in game. They're small things, but if we're going to get on him for the small things that he gets wrong, let's make sure that we praise the small things that he gets right. Late in the game, even though the play didn't go the way that it was supposed to go, you have a play where Khalil Mack is like, I'm out of gas. And Matt Nagy's like, okay, cool. We need to call a timeout because we want our best player on the field for the most important plays. That makes sense. We could have a discussion later about Chuck Pagano dropping Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd into coverage yesterday, but that's another subject for another time. But having Nagy understand that his best player on defense and probably on the team is not on the field, calling a timeout, understanding that here's a reason for me to use a timeout on defense because I want Mack on the field. Now, Denver went and converted on that play, but I still think it was the right move. The other parts of it are the entire mechanism on how the rest of the game goes down. It's not challenging a spot that would have cost you a timeout that you needed to win the game at the end of the game. It's working the official and making your quarterback aware of the situation that is at hand. What is happening, what needs to happen, and I'm right here with you. As soon as Allen Robinson is touched down, I want that timeout, and I'm going to be right here. And it was a matter of a second. It's a matter of a second. And they got what they needed out of it. So I give him a lot of praise. Let me give him another in-game thing that I think that he deserves credit for. We all knew what the problems were. We all knew that the Bears offense looked wrong in week one. We knew that they needed to try and run the ball. And I get that the big run, it skews the way the running numbers look for the Bears. It makes it look maybe better than it felt yesterday. But you had them run the ball 29 times for 153 yards. They averaged 5.3 yards per carry. To me, it's not that the Patterson play, not just that the Patterson play went for 46 yards. To me, it's the fact that you ran that play, then showed a similar look, and then got Gabriel a 14-yard run on a different run. It's that level of creativity that was kind of missing in the first game that the Bears played. So my hat's off to Matt Nagy, who said, oh, no, we're running the ball this week. We're going to call straight run plays, and that's it. We are going to run the ball here.
He did what we all suggested at this point with Mitch, is take those options away from him.
Yes.
Tell him what he needs to do every single play and just go from there.
And I don't think that it's necessarily punitive. Like you can't have your toys anymore, Mitch. I think it's strategic. If your quarterback is struggling to call the game that you want him to call, then why not help him out? And maybe at some point we can have a greater discussion about whether or not Mark Helfrich should be calling the plays, because there's a lot for Nagy as far as spinning plates goes. But I thought he spun the plates really well yesterday. So congrats to him and the Bears. Tony, why don't we take our break now? That'll give us more time. And if Nagy steps to the podium while we're in break, we'll break into the break and bring you Matt Nagy. But Bears coverage all day long on a Built Fort Tough Monday, brought to you by Ford and the F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. You'll hear from Matt Nagy next here on The Score.
Eddie P, you know what I'm saying? Birthday, man. And he came out and nailed that. That's how you want to play ball, man.
I promise you that later on I will give you a more extended version of Khalil Mack's post-game press conference, which was dynamite because he couldn't stop cussing. And I was here for it. I'm Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 2 o'clock. When Matt Nagy goes live up at Hallis Hall, we will bring him to you live. Our buddy Anthony Heron is with us every Monday after a Bears game. And if he were on the phone, I'd tell you that he was joining us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, 500 new and used vehicles. But he is actually here in studio and brought to you by your local Ford dealers like Alpamonte Ford and the Ford Tough F-150, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. Anthony hosts the pre- and post-game show over at Fox 32. He is an analyst for the Pac-12 Network. He's a man about town and a good friend, and he joins me here on The Score. That was quite the victory for the Bears yesterday.
Isn't it funny when, you know, because you go on post-game right after the game ends, I go on right after the game ends, and the end of the Bears game, it in a way sort of dictates just the mood in a certain capacity when you first come on the air, because you're reacting to what you just saw, and, you know, we all hope the Bears do well. And so just those last few moments of the game sort of indicate whether or not, you know, with us, it's Luke Kanellis bringing us on the air. With you guys, it's you and all your Bears greats bringing you guys on the air. And just those last few moments and how that can affect the way, you know, whether or not there's a wave of sort of euphoria as you're coming on the air, or if there's this very downtrodden sort of feeling that you're reacting to when you first come on. And it's sort of an interesting human dynamic of the emotions involved with how we have to be able to analyze things when we get on there. But we're all sort of invested to whatever degree in how the result ends up coming out.
I was joking with Dan and Connor of how gangster Vic Fangio with the play call for the 2-point conversion. I was like, oh, I've seen that play before. That's the Golden Tate play from the playoff game. That's some gangster-ish by Vic Fangio out there. What did you think of the decision to go for two?
I was surprised. I thought that, you know, Vic is two games in, and this is something Lou referenced on our post-game show, where Vic is two games into being a head coach. And so, you know, I sort of expounded upon that in saying that as long as he's been in the National Football League, it is a different thing when you have to make the decisions. When you're tracking game flow, when you're the one deciding whether or not you're going for fourth downs, whether or not you're trying to, you know, attempt two-point conversions at key moments, who's coming in and out of the games at different points. And for Vic, I thought it was a decision that didn't necessarily track the flow of the game, because when you look at the scope of the fourth quarter, Denver was outplaying the Bears throughout the bulk of the fourth quarter. It seemed like it made more sense to me to get the game to overtime and then outplay them again in OT. That was what I would have anticipated happening there.
Because the defense was gassed.
Defense was super gassed by that point in the game. And really, both offenses throughout the first half were very similar, taking almost the exact same approach. Now, Denver has the super veteran QB who's won a Super Bowl and everything else, but first half, they were pretty much the same dude. You had run games with a variety of running backs and a few different formations and guys handing the ball off a lot, being super safe with the passing game to try and negate the opposing pass rush. When it came down to the fourth quarter, though, that's where Denver said, all right, we got to sort of let our veteran guy loose here, and they did. They were very effective throwing the ball in the fourth quarter. There was obviously the interception after a stellar drive that Denver had going, the interception by Kyle Fuller. The next time they hit the ball, they drive it right back down there again. So Denver was moving the ball effectively on the Bears defense via the pass once you got to that point in the game, and that's where you see a veteran, a more competent sort of QB who – throughout the whole game, you don't want to just unleash the Bears pass rush on him. You want to try to refine things and keep him safe with the run game, with safe passing, you know, opportunities, but then mix up the tempo every once in a while. And when it came down to it, when they just had to drop back and throw it, they allowed Joe Flacco to do that, and he was effective with it. But when it came down to it, the Bears were just able to make that last little play when it counted.
I think about the way the Bears ran the ball yesterday. And I know that it wasn't sexy on a lot of plays until you get the big Patterson run for 46 yards. Am I a meathead to think that it was still effective, even though, like, is the 46-yard play a byproduct of we're running the ball?
No doubt. I've, in the one season and two games now that I've been watching Matt Nagy as the Bears head coach and calling plays in game, the most excited that I've ever gotten, where I literally stood up out of my chair and pumped my fist, was on 3rd and 3 in the first half, where Mitch just turned around and handed the ball to David Montgomery. The interior of the offensive line moved a couple of guys. Montgomery got hit before he picked up that first down, and that contact balance that we keep talking about spins off a dude, drive his legs, and picks up the first down. And I have never been more excited with a Matt Nagy play call than on 3rd and 3, he's willing to just turn around and hand it off on an inside zone to his running back. And that to me just showed from week 1 to week 2, some growth from the head coach, some, just like I was talking to you about last week, some trust of his personnel. It's a very simplistic play. It's a very meathead play, but he felt like he had an offensive line and a running back who I'm so glad they went from week 1 to week 2. And it's not that Mike Davis played badly in week 1, but they said, you know what? David Montgomery's the best back we got. We can start the game with this guy in the backfield. Let's do that. And who knows? Maybe they'll say it was just a personnel grouping, or Davis may start next week or something like that. This is our best back. We just drafted him. Let's get this guy on the field right away. They did that. They gave him the ball a bunch. He was really effective in doing it. Not a whole lot of splash play to it, but the Bears don't need splash play out of that particular position, out of what his role is in the offense. He's essentially a younger, quicker Jordan Howard with better hands. And I saw trust, that the trust that they didn't show in him in week 1 in certain situations, I'm glad we saw that in yesterday's game. And it only came out to a win by the skin of their teeth, but that's okay. They won the damn game.
Anthony Heron is here with me. He's one of our Bears experts. We love having him in studio with us to talk about the Bears, and in this case, a Bears win, 16-14 over Denver. Eddie Pinheiro comes through, 40-52, game winner, 53. Looked like it would have been good from a lot longer than that, too. He's clearly a guy who's confident. I mean, I know you heard the post with him yesterday. He's a confident guy, and I kind of like that. It's bordering on cocky. And I know that there are going to be rough moments.
I mean, he's a kicker with an earring. Yeah,
he's got two earrings. He was rocking two diamonds yesterday after the game, and good for him for doing it. How important was it for the Bears to win a game like that with a kick, and for Pinheiro to have a moment like that where the pressure is high and he comes through.
I like the Eddie De Niro. I like that. El Salvador is one that I like going with too. I use that hashtag because he, you know, did he save the Bears season? That's maybe a bit of hyperbole there, but it certainly would have been a crushing defeat if he didn't come through in that moment. Obviously, things had to happen to get him to that moment. And when you think back to even the end of the first half, there were indications that Matt Nagy was looking to be more aggressive with how he was willing to let Eddie Pinheiro go out even earlier in the game. You know, a bunch of reports about pregame. He's out there drilling 60-yarders like it's no problem. The thin air in Denver, we've been hearing about how big his leg is. We saw that on display a bit in the preseason also. And at the end of the first half, where Mark Slareth, who I thought overall had a fine broadcast, but I disagreed with his assessment of, he basically said it was stupid that Matt Nagy was being too aggressive in how he handled the end of the first half, where you can just get into the locker room and play it safe. Nagy actually did try to run a couple of plays when the clock's ticking away at the end of the half where they don't have any timeouts, and he really hadn't let Mitch do much in throwing the ball. But he said, you know what? Let's see if we can pick up a few yards. Let's see if we can air it out a little bit and try to put – I felt like that was him trying to put Eddie Pinheiro in a position – where whether it was let's pick up a silly penalty when they you know sort of feigned hurry up, got over the ball really quickly and to see if they could draw Denver off sides, you pick up a first down, maybe you complete another pass, see if you can get a 60-yarder from Pinheiro. That's what I thought Nagy was trying to do at the end of the half. I don't think he's thinking Hail Mary into the end zone, but because you're in Denver and you got this young kicker with a big leg, to me that was him trying to see if he can get a really long field goal, try and snag a quick 3 points going into the half. So I thought that was the initial indication that he was going to handle things differently. Then, of course, the 52-yarder and the game winner from there. And Pinheiro doing that, it buys him so much additional credibility within the locker room, around the city. I think Chicago fans can exhale for the time being and at least feeling like here's a kicker with potential because he came up in that initial big moment right there. He's not going to make every kick the rest of the season, but I think in the least he won't get booed the first time he misses a kick in front of Bears fans, because now they have this in their, you know, in their psyche somewhere, because they said, all right, we've seen him do that on the road when the team really needed it and he stepped up, and hopefully that's something that he'll be able to enjoy that memory either way, but hopefully it's just the sign of things to come with Pinheiro.
Mitch gets his shoulder hurt last year. Since he's come back, the Bears are averaging about 16 points a game. They got two defensive points in that stretch of time. I feel like we're now seeing a almost like a Tetris situation where defensive coordinators are kind of like, oh, we're going to add some more bricks to this thing and see if the quarterback can catch up to it. The new wrinkle is if you have a corner who's good enough, he travels with Allen Robinson. Before, it's, well, we'll show him a bunch of different stuff. We won't bring pressure. We'll make sure that we keep him in lanes so that our rush lanes are strong so that he doesn't get outside. And now it's, if you have a corner that's good enough, he's going to follow Allen Robinson. With all of these things, and it'll be what, Rob Ryan that's coming up with Washington this weekend, who is the guy who taught Mike Pettine. So there could be some fun things that end up happening to Mitch this weekend. What's still wrong with the pass game?
Well, two things. So one, with Washington, they've given up a bunch of strike plays. And so I do think that it's like three plays of 50 yards or more they've given up in the passing game this season. So, you know, we'll see whether or not they feel like Josh Norman is good enough to travel with Allen. I would argue that he's probably not. And, you know, we'll be able to evaluate that between now and next Monday night. But with the pass game so far through two games this season, the dependency on Allen Robinson in the first game last week, that manifested itself partially because of just the volume of passes that were being thrown. And I feel like one thing that we saw both in game one and game two was a lack of separation from the other wide receiver. And that was something you and I talked about a bit last week, just in my overall assessment that Mitch didn't play as badly in game one as he did, as sort of the perception of the city was. Part of the things that weren't picking him up was, one, like we discussed, Matt Nagy. I thought it was a, you know, really bad play calling game that he had. The offensive line with their pass protection struggled a lot. Again, partly in due in part to Matt Nagy and his play calling. But the lack of separation from the receivers on the Bears, to me, showed up again yesterday. It's been an issue where Allen Robinson, he doesn't necessarily need to separate. And we saw, even as Chris Harris was following him around in yesterday's game, there wasn't necessarily separation on Allen Robinson's receptions there, but he's not a guy who needs to create reception. He's just this ball magnet who can get out there and snag it away from defenders in this 50-50 scenario. The ball can be contested. Allen Robinson still has a knack for coming up with it. We'll see who else develops that knack. Anthony Miller's been absent so far. Taylor Gabriel, I thought, had a better game yesterday than he did in week one. But even for him, it seems like Taylor Gabriel sort of needs to be schemed into openness as opposed to just being able to run an effective enough route. With all that top-end speed that he hasn't necessarily shown a consistent acumen just to route a guy up and be able to create separation and come open. That's where Mitch's development will have to come along in throwing guys open, because if you don't have separation being created by your wideouts, then it's up to the quarterback to throw guys open. And right now, Allen Robinson is the main guy he's shown the trust in to say that if he's covered or not, I'm just going to throw the ball there. Not necessarily throwing Robinson open, aside from just some back shoulder throws, but even beyond the back shoulder, the anticipatory nature of Mitch's game can improve to an extent where he throws receivers open because he knows where the route's developing. And as he's reading the coverage, then he can get the ball there at a time and in a fashion where the receiver can still catch it before the defender has an ability to react. That's not where Mitch is at in his development yet.
How important was the win for Mitch yesterday? Him specifically.
I think it was good for Mitch. It was probably bigger for Matt Nagy and the team in general because, you know, right now the vibe afterwards was still that Mitch didn't play that great. And, you know, he attempted 27 passes, and a lot of them were of the play action and the pocket movement variety with varying launch points. But a lot of them were sort of predetermined reads for him. So I honestly thought he played better in game one than he did in game two yesterday. I was talking to Jim Miller about this after the game last night. It you know, strikes me that when a quarterback has an opportunity to sort of get in rhythm when he's asked to do more in a game, then it felt to me like Mitch threw the ball better in game one just because he was throwing it more frequently and being asked to drop back and read coverages more frequently. And while he wasn't amazing in game one, he was better, like I said, than what the perception was. Yesterday, I didn't think he was as effective, and part of that, I just don't necessarily think he ever seemed consistently in rhythm. But it feels like one thing we've seen, even back to Mitch's rookie season, when you think about like that Baltimore game where he attempted like a pass, and then at the end where they said, all right, we need you to complete a big pass, kid, and he completed it, and then suddenly they defeat the Ravens when he had to do nothing up to that point in the game. And we've seen it come up frequently in a young career where regardless of how he's performed up to that point, there's been moments late in games where Mitch rises up, Mitch throws big balls, Mitch completes big passes. That, to me, is a really good sign for the overall development that still needs to come along a lot further than where it is. But a guy who doesn't shrink when the moment's at his biggest, that's the type of moxie, that's the type of machismo, that's the type of bravado that you want a quarterback to be able to come through and rise up in those moments.
It's almost as if he's better in spaces where he only has to react.
That
let's take the game plan. Let's just play ball. Mm-hmm. Like if you say to Mitch, just play ball, he seems to be able to will himself to make good plays. It's strange.
Yeah, I would very much agree with that assessment. I think that's where, you know, I made the comment to you a few weeks ago that I'll blame Matt Nagy and Mark Helfrich more, just the Bears offensive staff around Mitch. I'll blame them more if he doesn't continue to develop, if he doesn't turn into a consistent quality quarterback, because it's there. There's a lot of elements you want from a high-level NFL quarterback that are there within Mitch that I feel like we see moments where they're getting it out of him. To get it out of him more consistently, I think he's going to keep putting the work in. I think it's going to be up to them to make it a consistent thing. But figuring out what he can and can't handle, and being willing to win games within the confines of that. That's part of what's on them as well. Matt Nagy didn't win the games within the confines of what Mitch could handle in week one. In week two, he did. Now, that doesn't mean we're going to see more runs than passes every week here on out. That's not always going to be a recipe for success, and the opponent won't always dictate that. The opponent in yesterday's game with Vic Fangio's defense and those pass rushes they got for the Broncos, that dictated the Bears should be far more conservative with their passing attack. And it worked out really well for them.
Anthony, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for being here. For being here, let's give Anthony another Hub 51 gift card.
All right.
He needs to go get nachos. We have got it for you. Hubbard and Dearborn right there at the corner. I actually had brunch there with my buddy Michael Kim. Yeah. We had a great time Saturday. I said, you got to have the chicken nachos. He's like, really? And he's like, that thing is amazing. So we did that.
Did you have a bunch of college games rolling
in
there?
Yeah, we were watching the early slate of the Big Ten games and everything else. It was a wonderful time that was had at Hub 51. And now Anthony, since he was here in studio, gets another Hub 51 card. And we thank Hub 51 for the $51 that Anthony is going to be able to use at their fine establishment. The bottom of the hour is being brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats, led by Big Ten Coach of the Year Pat Fitzgerald, hosts Michigan State on Saturday at 11 a.m. Ooh, Michigan State. Ooh, ASU. Ooh, tickets are on sale now at nusports.com. We need to take a break, and we thank Anthony. You should be following him on Twitter, by the way, at Big Ant Heron. When we come back, you will hear from Bears head coach Matt Nagy. You're listening to The Score. This segment is being brought to you by Valparaiso University. All those good people over there at Valpo. We all want to be a part of something bigger. At Valparaiso University, you can be part of something bigger without losing yourself in the crowd. And you'll discover that making the world a better place isn't wishful thinking. Visit valpo.edu to request information. Apply for a scheduled visit. They have a campus over by University of Chicago, like right across the street. So if you're thinking about furthering your education, valpo.edu. Let's hear. Oh, by the way, if you're wondering, like, what are you listening to? I'm Lawrence Holmes. This is my show. Here with you until 2 o'clock. I promise we'll do a little bit of Cubs at 1 with Zach Zaman. We should talk about them. Get the latest on Anthony Rizzo. I think he's going to be fine, y'all. I don't think this is a light the candle situation. I think he turned his ankle and he'll be all right in a couple of days. I think. But we'll hear from Zach Zaman coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll hear from the head coach of your Chicago Bears right now.
All right, so getting back last night and getting a chance to look at the tape, you know, it's always nice to be able to correct mistakes after a win. That's the good part. And I think that, again, what we saw yesterday was a team that was very resilient. We challenged our guys, to especially offensively, to show what kind of resolve we could have, how we were going to do that. So within that game and the way things turned, could have went a lot of different ways there at the end, and our guys kept fighting. And so I'm happy with that. And now we get through to film this morning, and now we move on to Washington.
Diagnosis for Bilal Nichols?
We're still working through exactly with him, you know, with his wrist. So we don't know exactly. We'll probably know here more in the next 24, 48 hours. We're still working through that. But, you know, it's his wrist.
You're working through it as IR? Something?
No, I don't think so. You know, I don't think so. But we'll know more here in the next couple of days.
What'd you think of the offense?
Yeah, I thought so. Big picture, I always start with the positives, okay? Number one, no pre-snap penalties, which is huge on the road, right? Loud crowd on the road against those war daddies over there with 55 and 58. They're good players. You know, we did a good job at that, and that was impressive. We protected the football in a game like that where field position and low scoring. We didn't give them a short field with any interceptions or fumbles. And I think overall in two games, with there being a lot more negatives and positives offensively, we've done a good job at protecting the football. And that's given us a chance for trying to figure out who we are and what we do and how good we're going to do it. That's helped us out. And then the biggest part to me is you go through a game like we went through yesterday offensively, and they stuck together and they did what they had to do at the end to win the game. And we preach that all the time is, whether it's the defense goes out and dominates and the offense, struggles, the defense picks us up. If the offense goes for it on fourth down, doesn't get it, the defense in turn gets a stop, right? If the offense goes for a 2-point conversion and doesn't get it, or excuse me, a touchdown from fourth and goal from the one and doesn't get it, the defense now make them punt. Well, yesterday was a pure example of the defense having a great game and doing really well and then kind of losing a little momentum. They get the touchdown and the 2-point conversion, and easily everyone could have just folded up and said, that's it, man, this is, but the offense made plays when needed and got us in a position to win the game. And that's what I take from it.
Matt, with the negatives of the first 2 weeks offensively,
right?
What are the most urgent demands you have to get this thing rolling and going the way you want it to go?
Well, for me, there's a little bit of rhythm to it. So when I say that, I feel like right now some of those chunk plays, like the one yesterday with CP, with Cordero, you know, that was, you could sense it after that play. You could really feel that sense, that vibe on the sideline, guys running off. Like there was a rhythm to, okay, next play's in, we're going with this. We're going to keep our, you know, our foot in the pedal. And I feel like in the last two games, we're probably lacking those explosive plays. And when you look at it, so as a play caller, it's first and 10, and now it's second and whatever, and now it's third and whatever, and now it's first and 10, and now it's second and whatever, and now it's third and whatever. Versus it's first and 10, now it's first and 10, now it's first and that. There's a rhythm involved there. I think we're 28th in the league right now in that category. And so that, to me, is when I dig into that thing and I say, okay, does that mean you got to throw the ball downfield more? Does that mean it's throwing the ball always? No. We just need more explosive plays. And that doesn't mean 40, 50-yard gains. What it means is plus 10 to make it first and 10 the next time.
Matt, in that regard, what about the X and O's operation of the offense? I mean, are you getting guys open? Are you putting pressure on the defense, causing conflict of assignment, doing things that kind of put pressure on the defense? It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of open. It seems like it's just some kind of...
Well, I mean, right now, when you look at it, as far as the numbers are concerned, the stats that are in this little packet here that shows where everybody's at, whether it's points per game or yards, you know, that would reflect that we're not. But I think to us, the what matters is the why part. And I feel like for us, just looking at the tape and seeing it, that right now it's just about getting into that rhythm and then understanding the execution of the plays, and then us as coaches too, making sure that we're putting them in optimum position to make the plays with whatever the play call is made. But we're not running different plays. We're not running anything different than what we did last year. It's just it's a long season. We feel good that we got out of there with a win. We do. But just like we told you last week, after that loss, you give that 24 hours and you move on to the next week. There's a lot of teams that are 1-1 right now. Really what matters in the end, when you guys come talk to me and you ask me these questions, what matters in the end is what is just that, the end of the season, not the start. So we want to figure this thing out, and we have time to do that, and we feel like we will.
Your numbers through two games are actually an offense similar to what they did last year.
Yeah, it feels that way.
What happened last year that got it clicking that you're hoping will happen now?
Well, in my opinion, every team – offense, defense, especially probably more offense. Every team is always a little bit different each year, whether it's personnel. And even if you're in the same flavor of specific type of offense, there's going to be some factors that go into it based off of personnel that you might do different from one year to the next. So you try to figure that out. And fortunately for us, we have a pretty good defense, so we're able to kind of work through that. Now, all that said, we're at a point where we feel good, especially after last year and keeping the guys that we have right now currently. We feel good with where we're at. And I think it just comes down to, again, more rhythm and just, you know, keep trusting in one another, keep fighting through it. And eventually it'll crack. And when it does, I think it's going to be pretty good.
Was a game like yesterday for you challenging as a play caller? Because you talk so much about the aggressiveness. Was that a tough game to call for you?
I think if you look at it, I don't know the exact numbers, but we were pretty balanced run and pass. And that's when you do that, you know, it can be challenging to a defensive coordinator. There were some third down runs, you know, that's a little unique. But for the most part, no, I think every game's a little different. And again, it's just, it depends on the type of game, but I felt fine yesterday in regards to that. You just got to, some of those, you felt like they're a little bit of body shots. You know, you might get 1 or 2 yards and then all of a sudden you pop an 8 yarder or you pop a 12 yarder. Then it's 1 or 2. And so that's the, probably any play caller's biggest challenge.
Regarding the decision to sit Sherrick, then wasn't that Sherrick's spot, that right end,
Well, for us, you know, being in a position that we were in with Trey and trying to figure out which way we were going to go getting up to game time like that, just talking through it with Tabes, that was the decision that we could have went in a couple different areas, but we just, you know, depth wise went through some things, and that ended up being the one. I mean, it's not easy because he's such a, you know, he's such a good player on special teams, and he gives you value with depth on defense. So, and then what he's done with us, like the person part. So those conversations when you have that with him are never fun.
Screen didn't play that right end spot.
Right, I don't think so, no. But, yeah, he was – that's another interesting situation there that's one for us to learn and learn from is that whole deal of how that ball moves on penalties there on those extra points and everything. So it's unique.
What would you make of the rule that allowed them to spot the ball at the one?
I know, yeah.
The 3.5 for –
yeah, it's a unique rule. I'll say that. It's unique. So I'm sure they'll look at it. And I don't think it happens very often. So now that it happened, maybe they'll check it out and see, you know, because it does. There's some advantage there to different types of rules. Like if there, for instance, instead of a delay game or instead of an offsides, there could be a personal foul, 15 yards that pushes you back. And now all of a sudden you're kicking a 48-yard extra point. You know, and now, okay, now we jump all sides, and now it goes from the 30-yard line down to the one. So they'll get it right, though.
Going back to your first down, what you brought up there, yeah. Losa plays, are you seeing open receivers on the video that are opportunities that you're not taking advantage of?
Well, there's a little bit of everything that goes into that. There's certainly times that there's guys that are open, and there's been times with some really good quarterbacks out there that guys are open and they don't get to them. But then you have the pocket, right? And then you have, you know, whether was the route open? When did you see it open? You know, so I'll give you an example, okay? So at the end of the game yesterday, right before the play at the end, when we threw it to A-Rob over the middle, there was a one right before that, correct? That was right over the middle. It was incomplete, right? So you guys have that all 22, right? Or do some do? So when you guys went, well, whenever, whatever. So whenever you watch that play, okay, because you don't know the specifics of our offense, you would say that was a bad throw, right? But guess what? It wasn't. You want to know why? And I can say this to A-Rob because he never, you know, he plays, does a lot of routes. But in that route specifically, it was supposed to be a flat route. He was supposed to flatten it off. But because he went high, it looked like a bad throw, right? So when everybody sees that, who's it go to? The quarterback, right? But really, he's throwing it to where he's supposed to throw it. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes there's that too. And I think that all plays into this whole thing.
That last sequence before the 25-yard completion was a little bit clunky leading up to it. It was 3 incompletions and a 12-man penalty. Number one, what happened on the penalty that caused you to do there? And mm-hmm. Were you displeased with the way it wasn't getting going before the last throw?
No, I was okay. I mean, we had a drop. Trey on the first one did the right thing and got out of bounds. Then we had to drop by 29 by Tariq. They had the penalty by them on the late, on the hit on the quarterback, and then the substitution deal is that one there is one that we're much better than for that to happen. We were in a very basic personnel grouping, and that's just a matter of communication of just saying we're one guy's in and one guy's out. That's about as basic and easy as it gets. But our guys need to understand that that's as an important mistake that there can be in a game. That's a 5-yard penalty that means a lot in that situation. We can't have that. And those are the things that, again, we want our guys to be better at, and we want to teach them and use that so they understand it. But that's just a simple – that one there is not – that's just an easy, hey, I'm in and you're out.
That's Matt Nagy speaking at Hallis Hall. We're going to change the backdrop in a little bit to take time to talk about a team that's won 4 in a row. With the first pick in the plumbing and heating supply draft, Contractors Select SupplyHouse.com. With next day delivery speed and total inventory coverage, SupplyHouse.com does it all. Stop wasting your time and money. SupplyHouse.com, your online supplier for plumbing, heating, and HVAC. Take it to the house. SupplyHouse.com. There's a lot there. I want to digest some of it, and while I do that, I want to talk about the Cubs and them scoring 47 runs this weekend over at Wrigley Field. I'm going to talk with Zach Zaidman about that next, and maybe get some Bears thoughts from him, too, on the score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.